Yes. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. I am David Augustine. My colleague Justin Derner was invited to give this talk, and he sent me here instead, but I'm very pleased to be here and had the opportunity to talk to you about work that we've been doing trying to take a participatory approach to research in rangeland management. I think one of the things that we do share in both agronomy and, can you not hear? It sounds really loud to me. All right, is that better? Okay, so I think one of the things that we do share in agronomy and in rangeland ecology is that we have this real challenge between conducting replicated experiments and trying to do research that is relevant to farmers and ranchers. And so this is a story about how we've tried to approach that challenge. It's an interdisciplinary project that I'm going to tell you about. It involves several of us at USDA ARS based in Fort Collins and Cheyenne, Fort Collins, Colorado, and Cheyenne, Wyoming. And we're working with colleagues from Colorado State University, University of Colorado Denver, University of California Davis, USGS, and Texas A&M. So it's a range of ecologists, livestock scientists, and social scientists. So the motivating factor for the research that I'm going to tell you about is this disconnect that has existed for decades now in the rangeland sciences between manager experience and scientific evidence. And what I mean is a lot of the research addressing ways that we move cattle in space and time and what the effects of those movements of cattle are on ecosystem processes. There's a very different story that comes from the consulting industry and from rangeland managers than what comes from the scientific literature. And so we wanted to address that disconnect. This was summarized. NRCS did the SEEP report, and when they did this publication in 2011, Conservation Benefits of Rangeland Practices, they really emphasized that most of the practices that were being promoted by NRCS don't have support from the scientific literature in terms of the purported outcomes. So how can we address this disconnect? The other thing we wanted to address is that sometimes as rangeland scientists, we get caught in our little ivory tower, and we don't involve stakeholders in the design of our research. So we have this idea that we're going to go do a bunch of science in the science factory, and then society will come to the loading dock and pick it up and go use it miraculously. And certainly there's a lot of research showing that this loading dock model is not highly effective. My interest in this project comes from my background as a wildlife biologist, and I was interested in how grazing management affects grassland bird populations in the western Great Plains. Grasslands are birds that breed in this region, are the most rapidly declining group of birds in North America, and part of that is just simply loss of habitat to croplands, but part of the issue is believed to be how we're managing existing rangelands and the way we manage livestock on them. So I wanted to also address this issue in this experiment that we were designing. So what do I mean by collaborative adaptive management? Many of you have probably heard of adaptive management. This is, we're trying to use adaptive management with the capital A. This means that we're trying to integrate experimentation into the design and implementation of resource management, not just monitoring. And by the collaborative part, we're trying to involve multiple stakeholders and draw on all types of knowledge, recognizing that both manager expertise and scientific knowledge are valid, important inputs. The work I'll tell you about is being done at the Central Plains Experimental Range. It's located in northeastern Colorado at the intersection between Wyoming, Nebraska, and Colorado. And there at the Central Plains Experimental Range, we have a 16,000 acre experimental ranch that my research group manages. And it's located adjacent to the Pawnee National Grassland that is managed by the Forest Service, and also all of the blue that you see on this map is Colorado State Land Board land. So ranchers in this region really are, they're operating on a combination of private, state, and federal land. A lot of management objectives, sometimes conflicting ones that arise from that. So what we did in 2012, we formed a stakeholder group consisting of 11 members to help us design an experiment. This 11-member stakeholder group consisted of four ranchers from Crow Valley Livestock Cooperative. This is a local cooperative that grazes on the Pawnee National Grassland. and they provide all of the cattle for our experiment. And then we brought in representatives from three conservation groups, the Nature Conservancy, Environmental Defense Fund, and Bird Conservancy of the Rockies. These were all selected because they are organizations that are very involved in management of grasslands in the Western Great Plains. And then we brought in representatives from four land management agencies that are active in the Western Great Plains: NRCS, U.S. Forest Service, CSU Extension, and the Colorado State Land Board. So we formed this group of 11 folks, and we said, first thing we asked them is, okay, if we were to give you a ranch, what would you want to manage it for? Can you all agree on what you would want to manage it for collectively? And so we held a workshop in 2012. This started in 2012. We held a workshop with these 11 folks. It was a two-day workshop, and we asked them to just write out a set of goals and objectives for what you would want to get out of a piece of land if we gave you a ranch. And so this is what they came up with. The overarching goal was to manage land in order to pass it on to future generations economically and ecologically. Then they divided up into three broad groups of objectives: vegetation objectives, profitable ranching operations, and wildlife. And then they also all agreed, this was a unanimous agreement on objectives that they wanted to manage for under each of these categories. And note, under the profitable ranching operations, we have both increasing livestock weight gains and making these systems more resilient to drought. So then, once we had these objectives, goals and objectives, we told them, okay, we're going to give you a ranch. So we took the Central Plains Experimental Range and we divided it up. We took 10 square miles. We divided it into 20 pastures. So each of these 20 pastures is 130 hectares. And they're paired. They're in 10 blocks or 10 pairs based on topography and soils. And then we said, we're going to apply for the yellow pastures on this map. They're all going to receive the traditional rangeland management approach. This is a very similar approach to what's applied on Pawnee and a number of the surrounding ranches. This is where we're going to bring in cattle in the spring. It's going to be great growing season grazing from May until October. And for the yellow pastures, it's going to be at a moderate stocking rate, where each of the 10 pastures gets its own herd, 20 to 24 steers. And for purposes of our experimental range, we're running an all-stocker operation, so we don't have to deal with milk or cow-calf pairs. We just have yearling steers that are brought in around 600 pounds and leave around 900. And then we asked them, what would you like to do, or how do you think you could manage these blue pastures in a way that would better achieve your outcomes than the traditional grazing management approach? And again, you all have to agree. If you want to do this, you all have to agree on how you're going to manage it. So we had a series of meetings in 2013 where they sat down and actually wrote out an adaptive management plan. And again, we emphasized it needs to be repeatable, measurable. What you're doing needs to be measurable. And we want to try to link why you're doing what you're doing to all of these desired outcomes. So they decided at the end of that they want to manage their cattle as one herd. They'll group them all up. We started out with the NRCS recommended stocking rate, which turned out to be 220 steers. And they just said we want to try to rest two pastures out of the 10 each year, rotate cattle through the other eight, and we're going to move them adaptively during the growing season based on precipitation, you know, active measurements of growing season conditions. And this is one of our steers opening the gate, decided to rotate himself. What else do I want to say here? That's not going forward. Okay. So we also sat down with them, and the scientists and the stakeholders collectively developed a monitoring plan in 2013. We lined out all these measurements, went out and got grants, and also had support from core support from ARS for doing all of these measurements of livestock, vegetation, and grassland birds. Then, so like I said, 2012 we met, developed our goals. 2013 we developed our management plan. 2014 is when we actually, and during 2013 we took baseline measurements on all these pastures pre-treatment, and then 2014 we started with our adaptive treatments. One challenge at the beginning was maintaining interest when they heard that we were going to spend an entire year of the project taking pre-treatment measurements. That really they really made all the stakeholders bored with it. You know, like, we have to wait another year before we really do anything. That was really valuable. I don't think we would be able to detect much in the way of treatments without those measurements. And then this is what it looks like. It's an example. We started in 2014 based on the weather conditions that year. They went through 7 pastures. We rested 3. Sorry. And then this is how it's turned out ever since. I'm trying to just use this to display how frequently we've been meeting with the stakeholders. So each white line in here shows you, or each white row in here is a meeting between scientists and stakeholders. And then each gray line is a time period where we're out implementing treatments and collecting measurements. And the main thing I wanted to just emphasize with this table is that it really has grown over time. We started out with 2 meetings in 2013, and every year the stakeholders have come back to us and said, we want more meetings, we want to engage with you more, to the point in 2017 where we have we had 5 meetings so far with the stakeholders in 2017, including a field day that was led by them. I certainly think that if we had asked them to do what we did in 2017 back at the beginning, no one would have stayed with the project. But it was that slow engagement, planning it from the beginning, and letting them come to us and say, hey, we're just not meeting enough. We need to get together more and discuss this more, that got us to the point where we are in 2017 with much more frequent meetings. And again, this is really that all opposite form of engagement from that loading dock model, where we're trying to engage continuously with stakeholders throughout the experimental process. I think the other thing that really has kept them engaged at this level is just the fact that we gave them control. And they're like, wow, this is really cool. We actually get to make decisions. At the beginning, I think the stakeholders they expressed concerns like, are you really going to let us do this? Or are the scientists just going to decide everything in the end? So no, we're going to let you do this. And that has really, I think, been a critical part of maintaining their engagement over the whole time period. I just want to run through a couple benefits or a couple outcomes data-wise so that I can talk about trade-offs and complexity and how we deal with that in meetings. One of the benefits we've seen from our management is that our goal was to increase variation in grazing intensity among pastures. That has, as we hoped, generated increased heterogeneity in vegetation structure among pastures. These 2 box plots, the one on the left is showing variability among the traditionally managed ones, the one on the right is showing variability among the adaptively managed ones. And what we really wanted to do was generate more variability on the landscape. So we succeeded with that. And one of the outcomes of that is it did, in fact, benefit the densities of one of the bird species of conservation concern that we wanted to manage for. So these orange bars show the densities of grasshopper sparrows in pastures that were rested the year before or received no grazing the year before, compared to pastures that were either pulse grazed by the big herd or grazed by the traditional herds the year before. And so we've almost doubled the densities of grasshopper sparrows in those rested pastures. The other benefit that we've seen coming from this adaptive management is that the amount of rest that we've provided on the landscape, combined with working with the scientists and stakeholders on a forage calculator and refining that over time, has given everybody sufficient confidence in understanding the system to increase the stocking rates progressively over time. So all of the stakeholders have unanimously agreed to increase the stocking rates each year. And so it's really the buy-in from the conservation organizations to continuously increase these stocking rates has come from that collaborative process. The downside of it, the big trade-off we've seen, is that our adaptively managed cattle are gaining significantly less weight than our traditionally managed cattle. And so this is really the value of controls. I think that's the main take home I would leave with you here, is that if I move too much, I advance things. So the take home here is, if you just looked at those black bars, those are the weight gains in our adaptively managed herd. Their weight gains have increased every year throughout the experiment, including an increase. I didn't put 2013 in here, but there's also an increase from the baseline in 2013. But when we have controls with the traditionally managed, we actually see that every year the traditional management is outperforming our adaptive management in terms of weight gains. And this is not, I had one rancher that predicted this, but very few of the stakeholders thought this was going to happen. I think this just illustrates, like, actually doing this together and having those controls to test cause and effect has been really important. The mechanism here, we've done a lot of work, is just that grouping them into that large herd has changed their foraging behavior. They're getting lower quality diets when they're grazing in the larger herd, and as a result, they're gaining weight less quickly. We also have really high uncertainty, so we've been running this now for 5 years, 1 year pre-treatment and 4 years of treatments, but we haven't had a drought. And even though we're getting lower weight gains, most of the stakeholders believe that if we wait, we're going to see that this management we've been applying is going to increase the capacity to sustain livestock through a drought year. But we have to wait. So it leads to this conundrum: should we change our management now, or should we wait and learn to see what happens in a drought year? So the uncertainty has been a real dealing with this uncertainty has been one of the real challenges. A couple of other lessons learned to share with you. One is just on the time scale that this has taken. It surprised me. I'm an ecologist, so I'm used to doing controlled replicated experiments. I'm also used to the three-year grant cycle. I would say in the first 3 years of this, one, we didn't have a lot of trust generated. Some trust was generated, but not sufficient for everyone to really start working together well. And it wasn't until years 4 and 5 that these stakeholders really had developed a level of trust and interaction with one another that they come to these meetings with really a positive outlook and the goal of getting along and making progress. And also they come at it now with an attitude that learning is really important, but that definitely was not the case during the first 3 years. So I would say doing something like this is really challenging within the time span of a grant cycle. The other thing that was hard for me is I went into it thinking it was going to be this science-based project where we're going to learn, show people how we can use science to make better decisions. I would say it's been clearly a mixture of science and manager expertise. Many of the decisions that we make each year over the winter in terms of adjusting stocking rates and also just how we, the sequence of moving the cattle, it's a fairly complex series of decisions that have to be made. And the information that we discuss when we're trying to make those decisions we can't rely on scientific outcomes or experimentation alone to achieve that knowledge. We're frequently asking the ranchers, well, we don't know this, what would you do? Or what's your experience on this subject? And that's the mixture of the two has really been the main process that has made it move forward. One other thing I want to conclude with is that we've been trying to follow this adaptive management cycle. And in the literature on adaptive management, I see a lot about how closing the loop is the goal. If you can close the loop, you're doing successful adaptive management. And what I mean is, you do this design, implement, monitor, evaluate, adjust, and then this getting to this adjust and actually using your monitoring data to adjust is really a goal of adaptive management. I would say our experience as a group from the past 4 years is that by the time you go through this cycle, where you are is so different from where you started that there is no such thing as closing the loop. So this is a diagram that we've put together to try to encapsulate our perspective on what the adaptive management spiral looks like. Each year you go through a cycle, but you end up somewhere new. This cycle through the middle is repeated years. If you can imagine this, where all these arrows are pointing down in the lower right, imagine that's where we are right now. We're just getting all our monitoring data, and this is where we are right now in October. We just had a grazing season. All our monitoring data is rolling in, and then we're thinking about what we're going to do for the next year. But the way information from previous years feeds in is really complex, and I think this is really important when we're thinking about managing for multiple ecosystem services. If you're just thinking about yield, crop yields, it's simple. But once you add in multiple objectives, and here we have 9 explicit objectives, it gets a lot more complicated. So here we have learning about cattle. We learn about cattle as soon as we weigh the cattle. We know what they gained. So each year we learn about cattle. But then learning about plants, well, that's a much more delayed process. There's a little bit we learned in the first 2 years, and it took us 3 years to really start learning things. And then learning about birds is even more complicated. It takes us about 4 years from applying a treatment to having data that we can think about in terms of how birds are responding. So each year we have a different set of data that we're discussing as we go through the cycle. That's one level of complexity. And then the second thing that's been really important is as we come into these this red part, encountering disorienting dilemmas and struggling with complexity and uncertainty, this is usually what I do alone at my computer. I get a bunch of data, and then I sit there in my office for a month or so, and I struggle with the data, and it never says what it's supposed to say. And I think, how am I going to write this into an interesting paper and get it published? And then I come out this end, learn and adjust is really just me. I learn and I write a paper. But instead of doing that, I don't do that anymore. I have to like get all the data together, and then I have to go to these meetings and discuss it with people. And it's that discussion with them, that collective arguing about what the data means, that has been the most important part of the process, and that's where the real co-production of knowledge and learning occurs. So I'll end there, and I just want to thank the Long-Term Agroecosystem Research Network and USDA ARS for being the main funding source for this project, as well as some grants from USDA NIFA. Happy to take questions.
We have about a minute and a half for questions.
I think it's very applicable to all the agricultural sciences. It definitely requires time and funding and a land base. That's the real issue.
Is there a history of collective research in this area that these farmers worked with researchers, or was it more the top-down, people come and tell them what to do?
Yeah, it was much more the top-down prior to this, and yeah.
What was their response?
I think everybody was, really uncertain at the beginning, but once they finally got to make some decisions and we went and did what they said in 2014, that's when people were like, this might actually work. It's hard to get people engaged at the beginning and build that trust.